This is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 160B, page 684. I'm a little closer to the time limit now. I've allowed myself too much license in certain places, following out my interest, which I maybe vainly hope will be your interest too. I realize that if I did not have to work my way towards the answer through focused thought at this moment and in this medium, I'd be able to deliver you the result, just the result. But sometimes in looking at how one gets there, if one does get there, something can be learned. So we're talking about the wonderful correlation, and we're talking about Venus as Earth's primary and alter ego, and how mysterious it really is, and how not too much is actually allowed to be said about it. Perhaps some idea may be gained if we remember that in an occult sense. Venus is to Earth as the higher self is to man. Again, setting the example. And Venus is as if angelic, and man is as if human. Of course, Venus does have its humanity, I'm not saying that, but the solar angelic direction, which man has to learn how to follow, is proposed or brought into man's sphere of attention by Venus and its lower affiliates. Remember, Venus does, in a way, sponsor individualization. First came the heart of the sun, then Venus, and then, of course, it all works out right here on and within our planetary scheme. On our planet and within our planetary scheme. The coming of the Lords of the Flame to Earth was all under law and not just an accidental and fortunate happening. And these Lords of the Flame, these are the Kumaras, whether 105 or 108. If the esoteric Kumaras remained behind and did not come, I don't know. I think it would be a violation of cosmic structure. I think we need six around Sanat Kumara. We need, I think, six around the solar logos. I think we need six around any logos. This makes an idea dawn upon me, perhaps not a new dawning, but we need... no good. Okay, let's see. Do I get anything there? We need six around the one. The one being Sanat Kumara, the one being our solar logos, the one being our cosmic logos, and on and on. And if we do that, we have the 14. Of which Ursa Major and Ursa Minor are great examples. We have the Father and the Son. We have the Kumaric Fathers and the Raylord Sons. And the Raylord Sons. We, you know, on our planet, we have the seven Kumaras. And also the seven spirits before the throne, which are the intraplanetary Raylords in Shambhala, or the Radiant Seven. Thus, 14 is really an archetypal number. And somehow that is being impressed upon me more and more at this time. And I see the structures by which the 14 are represented. So it was not just an accidental and fortunate happening, this coming of the Lords of the Flame. It was a planetary matter which finds its correspondence in the connection between the mental unit and the monastic permanent atom. Well, that's really important. Because It signals that Venus stands for the monastic permanent atom, and Earth, with its fourfoldness, for the fourfold mental unit. This is so, you know, so sometimes you're looking for what are the atomic the correspondences to the different permanent atoms in the structure of a solar logos. This is different from the chakra correspondence. So you kind of wonder whether, you know, oh, too many ideas. Okay. Permanent atom correspondences, that Venus equals monastic permanent atom, Earth equals the mental unit, Mars equals the astral permanent atom, or even physical permanent atom, Pluto, perhaps, equals the physical permanent atom, or vice versa, with Mars and Pluto. And then we could go up further, looking for other permanent atoms. Now I know that there was a discussion that Saturn is the correspondence of the physical permanent atom of the solar logos, and of course the three synthesizing planets get into the act there, naturally. But this is another perspective and something, okay, so with this must be considered page 406 of TCF, in which Saturn is discussed as the correspondence of the physical permanent atom. And Neptune and Uranus as reflections of the astral permanent atom and mental permanent atom, respectively. Well, you know, a few more pieces of the puzzle, shall we say. That's what I think we gather here when we see information of this sort. So, a planetary correspondence in the connection between the mental unit and the monastic permanent atom. Well, the base of the spine is fourfold across with a circle. The mental unit is fourfold cross with a circle. What will be the symbol of the Alta Major Center? Will it also be fourfold across in a circle, or will it be, as some Hindu books say, 96-fold, just like the Ajna Center? How many details there are to work out, of course, we just have to extricate ourselves from preoccupation with lesser states of consciousness. I'm very, you know, tantalized here. I'm very attracted to this information. And seeing, of course, that cosmic fire, it is so necessary for cosmic fire to be read through in a discursive, discussionary way. It's as if we were to hold a class on cosmic fire. Of course, all those tapes of the cosmic fire classes do exist, but they would not be as concentrated as this, as one's attention to the matter, word for word, phrase by phrase, line by line, sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph. Well, it's all coming. Again, as the Antikoran is built by individual man between these two points. So, again, in a planetary sense, is a channel being built by collective man on this planet to its primary. So, you know, there is an Antikorana connecting Earth with Venus, and there are certain beings higher near Mauna Kea, who are mediators in this process, and I think impress upon Earth the designs conceived in Venus, on a planet, in a scheme, in a chain, on a chain, no, on a globe, on a globe, but in a chain and in a scheme. These prepositions in English have to be observed. So in connection with these two planets, it must be remembered that Venus is a sacred planet and Earth is not, and this means that certain of the planets, right, we've done this one, are to the Logos what the permanent atoms are to man. They embody principles. Certain planets afford only temporary home to these principles. Others persist throughout the Mahamandatara of this Venus is one. There is the suggestion that Earth is only a temporary home to a principle and is only temporarily associated with a permanent atom. Well, from the chakric perspective, Earth may be the base of the spine, but there's a really keen idea here about Earth being connected with a mental unit in the site of the solar logos, and Venus with the monastic permanent atom. And that fits, So we say that Venus should represent a monastic permanent atom. Fits, since it is the home for now of one of the three super principles. It would be the monastic principle, according to its soul ray. According to the Jupiter soul ray, that would be connected with the Buddhic principle and the Buddhic permanent atom, perhaps. And Saturn would be connected with the atmic permanent atom. So here's a kind of configuration proposed, temporary, hypothetical configuration. And what will that be? That Saturn, atmic permanent atom, Jupiter, Buddhic permanent atom, Buddhic permanent atom, I hope that's it, yep. Venus, not an equal sign, but monastic permanent atom, Earth, mental unit, Mars. Well, what about Mars, you know? I think we'd get into trouble if we had to rely upon Pluto only for being the mental permanent atom. It seems that, I don't know, Mars, mental permanent atom or astral permanent atom, Pluto. No, not monastic. Earth is the mental unit. All right, well, I see that Earth has taken the place. So let's just say Pluto, astral permanent atom, or physical permanent atom, and Mars, astral permanent atom, or physical permanent atom. When those two get together, you can have some pretty bloody murderous actions, emotionally inspired, on the physical plane. Now, we don't have any more permanent atoms, and there would be other planets associated. Associated would be Vulcan and Saturn. Associated would be Neptune. Associated would be Uranus. Now all of this will change because Saturn, Jupiter, Venus are home to the super principles, but Saturn will probably move down to the present Venus position, Neptune into the Jupiter position, and Uranus maybe into Saturn's position later, when all that remains of the three synthesizing planets, but at this present time, they seem to uphold lower functions, according to Tibetan on page 406 of Cosmic Fire. So I would just say, you know, for this type of information, check page 406 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. The laying out of the anatomy and physiology of the solar system is complex, and it is complex to do that for the planet too. Much is veiled. But in the struggle to do so, at least for the solar system, maybe for the planet too, much can be learned. So that's what I do from time to time. I pause to try to lay this out. Maybe a maddening delay here. I hope not. One day, maybe all of these commentaries can be organized in such a way that it is easier for the listener and the reader, because it's not just a listener, it's a reader, isn't it? Because the book is right in front of us, to navigate, to negotiate. But, of course, we couldn't move around at the same speed as we can. We couldn't move around at the same speed as we can when we have the Alice Bailey CD-ROM. One day, who knows, we could have the entirety of the words on just one disc, and you could do a search according to sound. But that day may be long in coming. The thing is that all knowledge that we have is in the process of coalescence and correlation, giving a clear picture instead of a fragmented picture. Right now, our consciousness is, in terms of our knowledge, is very fragmented. We know a piece of information here, there, the other, but we haven't linked it all together to get this whole picture. Mercury, in a way, has to give way to the holism of Jupiter. We're not there yet. But technology will catch up, I think, so that it's possible to go to anywhere on the basis of sound itself and not just of the written word. It would be well to enlarge here a little on the connection between Venus and the Earth, which is hinted at in some occult books. Well, that's what we have been doing, right? And is somewhat touched upon in this. And the occult books, you know, especially The Secret Doctrine. The Secret Doctrine. Not a secret doctrine. There are secret doctrines of which we can say a secret doctrine. But now we really have here the doctrine that is contained in an essential sense within Shambhala. So for our planet, at least, it's the secret doctrine, even though our planetary secret doctrine is kind of a secret doctrine when you compare it with other planets or other stars or systems. I have stated that the interaction between the two schemes is due largely to their positive and negative polarity, and I pointed out that a similar relation underlies the relation of the Pleiades and the seven schemes of our solar system, and also the relation of Sirius to the system itself, and this we discussed, right? This question of polarity has been discussed. This, therefore, sweeps into close interaction three great systems, the system of Sirius, the system of the Pleiades, the system of which our sun is the focal point. Now, this seems to be a one sun solar system. I wonder if I could do this, one sun solar system. That'd be interesting. Let's see about that. We'll call it a one sun solar system. That will be useful. One sun solar system. One sun solar system. All right, so they all are related to each other for other reasons, but they are related. Ceres and Pleiades are related to each other also because they're related to our solar system. But think about this. They both confer Manus and they both confer Buddhi. At least Ceres is the cosmic Christ conferring Manus on the solar logos. Pleiades, the great center of cosmic intelligence, conferring Buddhi on the solar angels and also to a degree on the solar logos and conferring mind to the heavenly men, but also Buddhi, one would think. You know, and I was just refer to TCF 1162. All right, moving right along. Making, as we will have noted, a cosmic triangle. Within our system, there are several such triangles varying at different stages. And what does he mean, several such triangles? Does this mean Sirius, Pleiades, planet? Maybe one for each of the seven sacred planets, varying at different stages. According to their relation to each other, the differentiated force of the different schemes can pass from scheme to scheme, and thus the units of life on the different rays or streams of force become temporarily intermingled. Let's just say that our chains and globes are recipients of the ray forces of the different planetary schemes. So we do have receptors. We have receptors, and so do all the other planetary schemes in our solar system. In all these triangles, cosmic, systemic, planetary, and human, two points of the triangle represent each a different polarity, and one point represents a point of equilibrium or synthesis or merging. Well, when we look at the triangle here, let's cancel this and go to page 460. That may be the fastest way of operating. We see here that there are different polarities between the magnetic center and the emanating center, and this is the equilibrating or equilibrizing center known as the hierarchy. Okay. In all these triangles, cosmic, systemic, planetary, and human, two points of the triangle represent each a different polarity, and one point represents a point of equilibrium. In the triangle, let's see, between the Earth, Venus, and Mercury, is Venus the equilibrizing point? It's always very hard to think of Mars ever as an equilibrizing point. With a different polarity between the Earth and Mercury, or is Mercury the equilibrizing point with differing polarities? Because you know, and think of this. This is interesting, I think. Venus is now feminine. Earth is now masculine. Mercury is androgynous. So Mercury could be, in this triangle, an equilibrizing point. Well, you know, and of course polarities can change. Here's another one, equilibrating. That's a nice word, maybe, and it's more real than equilibrizing. So this should be borne in mind in studying both the macrocosmic and microcosmic centers, for it accounts for diversity in manifestation in forms and in qualities. It's the interaction of so many triangles that we have to learn something about. And because of triangles, we do have a transmission from scheme to scheme. Let's see. Because of triangles, there is made possible a transmission from scheme to planetary scheme. And of course, you know, there are triangles, as I said, triangles of equality. I pointed this out earlier. Three kinds of triangles. Right. Equality. All beings on the same level. Triangles of polarity. Two beings on the same level and one on a different level. And triangles of differentiation, all three beings on different levels. Give an example. A triangle of equality. Okay, well, that'll be easy. Say Aries, Leo, Capricorn. All three are constellations. Here is a triangle of polarity. I think it could be called by a better name. Capricorn, Saturn, Venus. Two are on the same level and one on a different level. And of course, that level can be higher or lower. Triangles of differentiation. Pleiades, Capricorn, Mercury. All three are on different levels. So triangles of equality, it's the, let's call it the equilateral triangle. Triangles of polarity, let's call it isosceles triangle. Isosceles, and triangles of differentiation, scalene triangle. This I went over before, but I think it's very important to have this in mind. I don't think there can be other kinds of triangles. One different, and thus two different. Well, let's see, one different and two different from the one. All three the same or all three different. What else could there be? And they will have different effects with respect to different dimensions in our cosmos. A correspondence might here be pointed out which may serve to convey light to those who have eyes to see. The Venus scheme being in the fifth round, so combine this information with that which informs us that we have in Venus a demonstration through the fifth chain. No? Chain and the fifth globe. So now what we have is fifth round, fifth chain, fifth globe. Had the fifth principle of Manus coordinated and developed, we did this before, the minor four monastic aspects had been synthesized, and the Buddhic aspect, minor four monastic aspects, what do we mean here? The four lower subplanes of the mental plane had been synthesized, and the Buddhic aspect was being provided with the means of expression through the medium of the perfected fifth. Well, that's happening on the astral plane right now. Happening on the cosmic astral plane now. The sixth, the Buddhic principle, is the objective of the Venusian Lord, and he has perfected a fifth. We have not quite perfected a fourth and are working on getting the fifth to work through it. Buddhi is monastically demonstrating on Venus, and higher Manus is mentally demonstrating on our Earth. Let's see. Buddhi is monastically demonstrating on Venus, and higher Manus is mentally demonstrating on Earth. Our heavenly man, in the fifth round, which is not yet the case, will have attained a paralleling point of evolution, and the fifth principle will, as stated, no longer the object of his attention as regards human units, but right now, the fifth principle is the object of his attention. Okay. Our heavenly man in the fifth round will have attained a paralleling point in evolution, and the fifth principle will, as stated, be no longer the object of his attention. Now, this also tells us that our heavenly man is in the fourth round. Schematically speaking, the fourth scheme round. As long as we get our terminology correct, we'll be okay. Now, how those rounds work, you know, it's very intricate. That I don't see a way of ascertaining that now. The theosophists have laid everything out in this perfectly sequential manner. One thing after another, the concrete, linear, Saturnian mind has done this. But the relationship between our chakras is not that way. And the chains and the globes are chakras. So we need the parallel from how our chakric system is stimulated. And we need to compare it with how the chakric system of a planetary scheme may be stimulated. And I think it's very intricate. I think it's depending upon the ray, and there's a lot of overlap. When speaking of the effect of the rounds on chains and globes, the principle, well, I'll call it by something, principle of overlap must be considered. It's not like, you know, our, well, think of it. Think about what it would mean. We just concentrate on the sacral center only and all the other chakras shut down. Then we stop on that. That shuts down. We just concentrate on the solar plexus. Then that shuts down. We concentrate on the heart and so forth. See what I mean? It wouldn't make sense. We have them all going at the same time, don't we? And they're all in the process of simultaneous development. So, in some ways, rounds may be occurring simultaneously in different chains. Maybe the scheme round is more sequential than the various chain rounds. I'm remembering I got into this in the written material, and maybe something suggestive comes of that. But maybe not. Well, I think so. Something suggestive, at least. Just as Venus is negatively polarized to our Earth scheme, so the seven stars of the Pleiades, yes, are negatively polarized to our seven schemes. This we discussed. A very pertinent question might here be asked. We might justly inquire in connection with the point that Venus is negatively polarized and also that the Pleiades are equally so, why they should be termed negative if they are donors and not receivers, because the positive pole in any polarity gives. For to be negative is surely to be receptive. Usually, positive pole gives, right? This is indeed so, but the question arises in our minds owing to the lack of information and consequent misapprehension. That's the whole story of our approach to occultism. Lack of information followed by consequent misapprehension, you know, what we have here is illusion. Venus may have had much to do with the impartation of the stimulation which resulted in great events on Earth via the Venus chain of our scheme, but our scheme gave in a mysterious way more than was received, though the gift was not of the same nature. We have looked over this, but it's so well stated that, you know, we might as well read through it again for a refresher. Have you felt the need ever to be refreshed regarding the information you are absorbing? Repetition has its place, right? It does have to sink in. The connections between the brain cells have to be firmly established. The coming in of the Venusian influence to our chain and to our planet with the subsequent stimulation of certain groups in the fourth creative hierarchy, the human, ah, wow. Do we see this? This means, whoa, this means that animal, man, was in the fourth creative hierarchy. And can we say that animals, plants, and minerals are monadically considered also in that hierarchy? I've been, you know, maybe my logic is leading me far astray, but look, if certain groups in the fourth creative hierarchy, it was animal man who was stimulated, right? So, animal man was stimulated and is a member of the fourth creative hierarchy. No human being was stimulated. There were no human beings. There were not yet any human beings. So, you know, I've wondered, because, you know, you don't see the... We don't have it on maps, the vegetable monad, the mineral monad, the animal monad. They all seem to be members of the fourth creative hierarchy, which is to them the macrocosm. So the monads of the lesser kingdoms seem, in the last analysis, to be members of the fourth creative hierarchy, just as such members can move into the kingdom of souls and the kingdom of planetary lives and still be members of the fourth creative hierarchy. So that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, really, maybe for the first time this is dawning on me in a more complete sense. All the lower kingdoms and higher kingdoms up to solar lives. I don't think we can bring solar lives into this, can be considered members of the fourth grade of hierarchy. In different stages of unfoldment and working through different kingdoms. I know I skirted around this thought at one point in my teaching, but never developed it far enough, and maybe this is how it is. Well, you know, I say, well, I'd like to teach a class on this and, you know, present it, but that, in a way, is what I'm doing now. Teaching a class on this, in a way, for whoever can get this far, and, you know, one day, what I would say to my colleague Brett and to others who are helping me with this and who are younger than I am, one can cut and paste different sections of the commentaries, the sections, maybe like this one, which really convey some new idea. And that will make it easier to research some subjects. Anyway, they caused there was a paralleling event which was originating on Earth, which caused, well, an event originating on Earth which caused a paralleling event of even greater magnitude in the Venus scheme. This affected the sixth hierarchy, one of the Deva hierarchies dwelling in the Venus scheme. Now, the sixth, you know, these hierarchies are trans-systemic. So they may have their own planetary adaptation, but creative hierarchies are trans-systemic across the system. In other words, there are human monads on other, in relation to other planets. So when I say, or have said, that a hierarchy is a collection of monads, it is true, but, yes, it is true to an extent. But is it only the kingdoms of nature who have essentially the human monad in process of, in metallization and vegetalization and zoonation? And what about those lower groups of beings who are not yet man? Are they human monads as well, in some sense? Or do they have their own monadic fixation or placement on a particular level? This opens up a whole new possibility. The sixth hierarchy, well, you know, our sixth hierarchy is what? It doesn't have to be a lower one, it can be a higher one. It can be the burning lives of desire on the sixth from the bottom plane. Are there parallels between these hierarchies? This was a Deva hierarchy. We don't know of what nature, but maybe there's a parallel. Between this sixth Deva hierarchy and such a hierarchy on working on this planet also. We're not told of what nature it might be. If we look for the number six, we've got either the lunar lords, which doesn't seem right because Venus is so advanced, or we have, well, the divine flames are a sixth hierarchy, counting from above, and counting from below, the burning sons of desire, or the builders, the greater builders, are a sixth hierarchy. The stimulation emanated via our sixth chain, or second from the angle of vision. Maybe it would be, as we say, second mystically and sixth occultly. But if it was sixth, second occultly, then we're talking about the Venus chain. So this could be the Venus chain. which is the second occultly, and would naturally affect Venus. The magnitude of the difference can be seen in the fact that in our case, one globe alone was affected, whereas the influence of our scheme on the Venus Venusian was such that an entire chain was stimulated. This was brought about through the positive polarity of the heavenly man of the Earth scheme. Well, you know, after years and years, it all begins to fall into place. Not all, but some of it. V-N-U. We'll call this Venusian. Venusian. V-N-U. Okay. The statement that the great Kumara, or the one initiator, came to this planet from Venus is true insofar as it embodies the fact that he came to the dense planet, this dense planet, the fourth, in the fourth chain, from that chain in our scheme, which is called the Venus chain, and which is the second chain. Well, you know, I opened this up for our viewing long ago. We didn't get there. But we have been there before. And here is the Venusian chain of our scheme, and here is the Earth chain. And the great being, Sanat Kumara, came in that way. The one initiator. He came via the second globe in our chain. Let's make sure we know what he means. Here's the second globe. And here is another globe. This is the second occultly, but the sixth occultly when it comes to the Venus chain of our Earth scheme. So he came by the second globe in our chain. His scarcely felt vibration was sensed occultly in the second round of our chain, passing through various globes. But only in the third root race of the fourth round, in the second round, and it was also here that the Laws looked in to see if man could be created. This is the sort of reptilian round, as it were. Not to be confused with the prevailing glamour now that some human beings are really reptiles. You know, it's just impossible for human beings to believe almost anything if they don't check it out in terms of outer fact and reasoning and inner perception. But only in the third root race of the fourth round did conditions permit of his physical incarnation. I.e. in the ethers. And of his coming as an avatar. And I just say, without benefit to himself. Very reverently might it be said that the first three rounds and the two succeeding, you know, and I have to say, if the Tibetan is capable of revere, what about us? Have we so outgrown the sixth ray, of course, veneration and reverence? They all relate to Venus. It's an attitude of a Venusian attitude. To have veneration for someone is to have reverence. The venerable person, to recognize the venerability of a source. And the attitude when one has veneration is also to have reverence as well. Very reverently might it be said that the first three rounds and the two succeeding root races in this chain correspond to the period prior to birth, or a Virgoan period. And that is coming in the fourth round, with the subsequent awakening of Manas in the human units, however that happened, find their analogy in the awakening of the life principle in the unborn infant at the fourth month. We do not really have the birth of Christ yet. But we do have a quickening. We do have that. All right. Well, friends, that was not so painful, perhaps. Always opening up more questions than can be answered. But, you know, in a way, it's so much easier when you have the whole paragraph, the whole context. When things are taken out of context, you just have to use your own associative power, which is by no means as good as what Master D.K. has written surrounding it. But maybe I'm just too impatient to go back to get the entire context for every extract, and will pay the price accordingly. Maybe sometimes interesting ideas will arise, but other times erroneous ones. Anyway, here we have the whole context, discussing the coming of the Lords of the Flame and the Petries and Solar Angels to our Earth, at different times, mind you. One 21 million years ago and the other 18.5 million years ago, right? The coming of the hierarchy. More like 18.5 million years ago. The 105 or 108 Kumaras. But the individualization of man on this planet took place 21 million years ago, and it took some 3 million years. And then at a time after the coming of the Lords of the Flame, for humanity to wake up to what had happened. I am a distinct center, and I can see myself as the center of the birth of egoism. Not yet egotism. Egotism is based upon egoism. You have to have the orientation towards I-ness before you exaggerate the importance of I-ness. So let's just say that egoism precedes egotism. The orientation towards I-ness must precede the separative exaggeration of that I-ness as found in egotism. So you can be an egoist or an egotist. Egoist tells you something about the stage of your identification. An egotist tells you that you really exaggerate that stage of identification and its importance. So to be an egoist is to, in other words, of an egoist, we learn something about his stage of identification. Of an egotist, we learn that he has exaggerated the importance and the distinction of his stage of identification. So one is a more general term, and another is a vice. To be an egoist, those who are ignorant are egoists. Those who are verging towards the left-hand path and continue in their orientation are egotists. I suppose the left-hand path is filled with the most notorious egotists possible. We have some hints here on the science of triangles. Two hints can here be given for thoughtful consideration in connection with one of the heavenly men, which cannot at this juncture be pointed out. We have one triangle of force to be seen in the following three centers. The fourth center of which the Manu and his group are the expression, the center of which the Bodhisattva or the Christ and his adherents are the focal point, the center of which the Mahachohan and his followers are the exponents. We have one triangle of force to be seen in the following three centers. Well, of course, this triangle is occurring on Earth. Is it connected to another triangle, like Vulcan, Venus, Mercury? Know what I mean? Vulcan, Ray 1, the Manu's group. Venus, Ray 2, essentially, the Bodhisattva's group. Mercury, Ray 3, essentially, the Mahachohan's group. That is, there is a triangle there. In connection with one of the heavenly men, which one cannot at this juncture be pointed out, this coming together of information, the juncture, we have one triangle of force to be seen in the following three centers. Well, sounds a lot like the Earth, but let's see what else is said. These three groups form the three centers in one great triangle, the triangle which is not yet complete in complete vivification at this stage of evolutionary development, and here we are minded. No. Here we are reminded. What are we reminded of? Got caught in the technicalities there. Yes, of the triangle between Shambhala, hierarchy, and humanity. And DK lays that out for us with arrows, sometimes going one way, sometimes going both ways. The diagram with arrows going in one direction or in both directions, and shows that the complete relation lies ahead. You know this diagram, so I don't think I have to go looking for it. Another triangle in connection with our own planetary logos is that formed by the seven Kumaras. Indeed. The four exoteric Kumaras corresponding to the four minor head centers, and the three esoteric Kumaras corresponding to the three major head centers. And, you know, you have to ask, is Sanat Kumara, because he is visible and not esoteric, and not one of the esoteric Kumaras, to be considered then an exoteric Kumara? Well, let's make a exoteric Kumara. Right, and we'll make another one here. Okay, let's do that better. We have an exoteric Kumara, and now we will have exoteric Kumaras. Plural. Okay. So, it appears that this first triangle, in some strange way, is not to be connected with our planetary logos at all, but Of course, it's on our planet, and it has origins, I think, in Vulcan, Venus, and Mercury, I would think. But another triangle in connection with our own planetary logos is that formed by the seven Kumaras. The four exoteric Kumaras corresponding to the four minor head centers, you know, and see, for instance, TCF 170. And the three esoteric Kumaras corresponding to the three major head centers. Well, what are minor and what are major? And where are the head centers? So is he to be considered an exoteric Kumara, Sana Kumara, because he is, in a way, appearing on the maps and is not one of the hidden Kumaras, and that would be problematic because he is the most powerful of the intraplanetary Kumaras. He is the lord of the planet, or the direct extension of the lord of the planet, whereas the other Kumaras may be direct extensions of the other planets. Sacred ones, perhaps? But even Sana Kumara is not an extension of a sacred Kumara, but because he's called Sanat, he can be an extension of Saturn in a way. Saturn is so closely related to our Earth via that great third ray being. So what is the triangle? There is a triangle of three esoteric Kumaras. There's a triangle of three exoteric Kumaras. It's called the triangle of the Buddhas of activity. And in a way, we would have this as a kind of triangle. The esoteric Kumaras, and the Lord of the World, the first or central Kumara. That's another triangle, really. Two triangles, but combining two triangles and another point, you get a three-way relationship, which might be considered a triangle. The second hint, okay. Another triangle in connection with our own planetary logos, right? So we don't know whether the first thing he was discussing about one of the heavenly men, and you just have to say, is it ours? Because below it seems so. The Manu, the Christ, the Bodhisattva, the Mahachon, they are a definite triangle within our, on our planetary globe. And maybe there are higher correspondences in the scheme, and also on chains. So higher correspondences on chains and also in the globe. The second hint I seek to give lies in the triangle formed by the Earth, Mars, and Mercury. Well, I sometimes call it, you know, the Earth and its polar opposite, and Mars, the complement, Earth, Mars, and Mercury. Okay, it's not Venus. Okay. Well, we remember that in terms of the schemes, Mars is called the third scheme, Mercury the fifth, Earth the fourth. And here we go with that. This is the Mars scheme, number three. This is the Earth scheme, number four. And this is the Mercury scheme, number five. So there is a contiguity, a continuousness here. They are contiguous. In connection with this triangle, the analogy lies in the fact that Mercury and the center of the base of the spine in the human being are closely allied. Now, this does not say that Mercury is the ruler of the base of spine center of man or of the solar logos. It does not yet say that. Mercury demonstrates Kundalini and active intelligent activity, while Mars demonstrates Kundalini latent, and the truth lies hid in their two astrological symbols. It's transmutation and planetary geometrizing in transmutation and planetary geometrizing. The secret may be revealed. Well, you know, astrological symbols, Mars also the cross above the circle. Mercury, the circle above the cross with a lunar hat, a semicircle on the head of the circle. So Mars has to pass first through the Earth stage, which brings the cross up into the circle, then through the Venusian stage, in which the circle extricates itself through the detachment of the cross, and then into the Mercurian stage, still higher, in which a crescent of receptivity is added. Crescent of receptivity. So, presumably, able to receive the transmission from still higher sources via that, let's just say that Mercury has its own satellite dish. What's the purpose of a satellite dish? To receive telepathically signals from far afield and to respond accordingly. So in Mars, with the cross above the circle is just not rising in the cross. It's the power is there, the power of spirit, but the cross holds it down. The Earth, then, is also a symbol for Kundalini, because it represents the base of the spine, center of the solar logos from some perspectives. And then there's more of the fusion of the two. The circle containing the cross. With Venus, the circle is liberated, and with Mercury, we can say that the intelligent rising of the Kundalini has occurred. I don't know if we can really connect Venus with the Kundalini. I'm only doing that because of the symbol of Mercury. But the circle is now free of matter and is free to work its way up through matter, intelligently unifying the polarities caused by the lunar disk, or at least which the lunar disk symbolizes. Well, okay, I've done it again, with interesting subjects. The end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 160B, page 688. Page 688. And beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 160C, page 688.